Right, well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. First of all, I'd like to say thank the organisers for the opportunity to talk to you this evening. I think as the first speaker, I'm going to set for you the sort of reason for the data deluge. The things that we're facing, the science that we're trying to do in particle physics at CERN, and why that leads to this enormous amount of data. I fortunately got friends of mine to follow me, and they said that at least one of them said that he was always good to have me going first because then he could tell me all the answers to my problems and educate me. So I'm hoping to get educated just as we all are. What I'm going to talk about initially is to give you an idea of why this data comes, why we're motivated in CERN and in particle physics to which will lead to all of this data. And it's all based around this thing here, the Large Hadron Collider, for which we will have operating in 2005. Now, I want to give you a very brief motivation of why one should do these big experiments. I'm going to start with this rather nice drawing of Leonardo da Vinci's of a man, and sort of pose you a couple of questions. First of all, you'd like to know what that man is made of. And secondly, what sort of size, why is the size he is? It's the second of these questions that is going to become very important to me for CERN in the future. Now, you know the answer to the first part. He's made of molecules, he's made of atoms. The atoms are made of protons and neutrons with electrons circling around them. And we now know from particle physics that protons and neutrons are made of up and down quarks. We know the constituents of that man in all great gory detail, so to speak. We also have an understanding why he's the size he is, because the size is controlled by the size of the atoms. And the size of the atom is controlled by the mass of the electron. If you make the electron twice as heavy, then the atom would shrink by a factor of two. So if we really want to understand why he's the size he is, we want to understand what this mass of the electron, why it has the value that it does. Now, I said we knew all about the things that are there in that man's made of. However, when we write down the theories for that, then there's one major problem. The only theory that really works to date is one where all the masses of all the particles are zero. So we have no explanation, right, of why the electron has the mass it does and hence objects have the size that they do. Fortunately, Higgs, a professor in Edinburgh, came along with a very nice idea. And that was that there was a thing, a Higgs field, permeating all of space. Particles moved through it, they interacted with it, and by this method, this interaction, they picked up mass. And that was his good idea. And he can fit this into the problem theory of particles, and it all works. However, of course, we don't know that it's right. And the key to finding out whether it's right is to finding a thing called the Higgs boson that is associated with this Higgs field, rather like a photon is associated with an electromagnetic wave. If you can find the Higgs boson, then you'll know that Mr. Higgs's idea was right, and he will get, without a doubt, called to Stockholm for a Nobel Prize. The only trouble is, Mr. Higgs, although he told us about this part and he had this wonderful idea, he didn't tell us what its mass was. And so therefore, if you're an experimenter, you wish to check out this theory, you've really got to search for it in a completely open area. What we do know from other things is that the mass is less than about 1,000 times our units of GeV, but this really is about 1,000 times the mass of the proton that goes on to make one of the constituents of the nucleus. Now, if you want to look for a particle of this mass, then you have to get a lot of energy there and use Mr. Einstein to convert energy back into mass to produce this particle. So we need to have collisions where the energy is contained in them with at least 1,000 GeV of energy. And that's where the Large Hadron Collider comes in. That is designed to take us up to these energies to be able to look at this, search for this particle. And the Large Hadron Collider is sited at CERN on the border of France and Switzerland. And we will be putting it in this tunnel that's already there, that's marked out here on this on the Pays de Gex of this area, which at the moment contains a working accelerator. We strip the old one out and put a new one in. This accelerator is underground. And it has, and now we're starting to come to where this data problem comes from, it has collisions of particles to generate this high density of energy in a number of places in this tunnel 100 metres underground. And what I'm going to be talking about particularly tonight is the problems that these two experiments, big detectors, provide, these ATLAS and CMS. Now, what do? In this thing, we send protons round these rings in opposite directions and collide them. Now, the one problem, one of the many problems with the Higgs boson is that it's not only we don't know its mass, but we also know that it's produced very, very infrequently. So we have to collide lots of bunches of protons with one another at this point here to try and produce that Higgs boson and then to find it. Now, the numbers become very large in what we're having to do. First of all, we have to have a lot of energy in these beams, so there's a lot of energy contained in the collision. But secondly, we have to have a lot of protons in each one of these bunches. So this 27-kilometer accelerator has spaced out in every 8 meters a bunch of protons, which has got 100 billion protons in each one of those bunches. They then, at this point, collide with one another, and we hope to see a proton-proton collision, which really, because we know the protons are made of quarks, is a quark-quark collision. And we're getting down now to the energy at which, in this collision, that we can produce a Higgs boson. Now, these frequencies cross at a rate of 40 megahertz, 40 million times a second at this point. Each time there will be around 30 actual collisions of this sort. So per second, there are a billion collisions occurring here. Problem is that the Higgs boson is probably only produced in one every 10 million million collisions. So we have to look at an enormous number of collisions to be able to find that Higgs boson. Now, to find it, you put a detector around the collision point that's in the middle there. Now, this is a detector. This one here particularly is about 10 stories high. It's complete electronic detectors, sensors through all of this volume. It's got the order of 150 million different sorts of sensors in it, with millions of control logic to deal with it, many lines of software code to run such a detector. It also has to be assembled by many, many people from all over the world to assemble both the intellectual and technical abilities to be able to put it together. That's itself an enormous challenge. There are two of those experiments. CMS is somewhat similar, to give you a feeling there. You can see this is the compact of the two detectors, and here are a few people standing around to give you a scale. Again, it's like a Russian doll. There are things emerging here, detectors all the way around. Now, those detectors, as I mentioned, have to be put together by people from all over the world. CERN is a focus now of work in this area. In CMS, there are an order of 1,800 scientists and engineers that are working together with the technicians behind them in 150 institutes in 32 countries. When we started to build the LHC, we actually didn't know how to build the detectors I've just described. We did 10 years of R&D to develop the new technologies. Now we know how to do it, and we're building them for installation and operation in 2005. Now, those detectors also present us the next start of the problem, next stage of the problem, and that is they produce a very large amount of data. This detector, CMS or ATLAS, it starts with these 40 million collisions, crossings per second, leading to a billion events per second, which, when you take the data out from the detector, gives you what is called a petabyte of data. That's 1,000 million bytes of raw data per second coming out of this experiment. That's roughly equivalent, again one has silly analogies, to everybody in the world and the Earth having 20 telephone conversations at the same time. That's the amount of data flow that comes out of one of these experiments. We have to then reduce it. We have to sift through all of this data. It's done with various levels here, various stages, levels of sophistication, until we come down particularly to the computing part with embedded processors and PCs at the end. We reduce this 40 megahertz of collision down to 100 hertz, right? 100 times per second we record some interesting information, and that means we've reduced enormously this petabyte of data. However, we run these experiments essentially for the whole year. So when you then take the number of seconds in the year and multiply it again by this, you again arrive back at a petabyte of data. So we're talking about an enormous amount of data that has to be sifted through to do the science that we want to do. Sifting through that is a non-trivial exercise. What we're trying to look for is collisions where a particular signature, in this case these four green tracks, if they were observed, would lead us to discovering the Higgs boson. But there's many tracks, thousands of tracks in each one of these events. So we have to go through the analysis of all that data, the compute power, to be able to find the really interesting things. It is really more than a needle in a haystack, it's a needle in millions of haystacks. Now what does that force us into realizing? It forces us to realize that we have to make an enormous leap forward in data analysis ability. When we've projected what the computing capacity is we need to analyze this data per experiment at the LHC, we find that we need, in these units, about 1 million units. Now, these units are one of these 20 PC that you would have nowadays is about 20 of these units. So we'd have to have the order of 50,000 PCs working to be able to give the capacity to analyze the data. This is where we are at the moment, on this line here. We've not crawled up this axis. This is the thing that we have got to do by 2005 to be able to produce the good science that we want to get at. The same is true with data storage. The data that we have to store, here we are at CERN at the moment, working along here. This is what I was describing to you, the amount of storage that we have to have in 2005, 2006. So we have got a real problem to deal with. Earlier we solved the problem of building detectors and we didn't know how to do it. Now we have to go into the problem of solving the data challenge that we have. I want to emphasize that, of course, CERN is a global laboratory. To actually analyze that data, to sift through it, people all over the world are going to be looking at that data. So this data is going to be distributed throughout the world for people in universities, research institutes throughout the world to look at things and also to use their computer capacity to be able to bring to the whole research program that the insights that we hope we will get. So at the moment, we, like many other sciences, are facing up to this issue and we are setting up looking at the questions of how we are organized throughout Europe and then throughout the world, the computing that we need. And here we see CERN at the center, the data flowing from the experiment to the center, central computer, then being fed out to what we're looking at the moment as regional centers in various spread out over the world, which are then linked to universities in the rest of the world, where the person on the desk in the research institute or university can be analyzing the data throughout all of this system. So this then is the challenge that we have to face. We don't have the answers yet, but it's clear that we find a lot of resonance, shall we say, with the rest of science in this big data challenge or data flow and computing challenge that we have. Here you see the cover of the book, On the grid, the computing grid, which I'm sure we're going to be hearing about again later on this evening. It's interesting, this addresses five very important areas of computing, and I've tried to indicate in the few words that I've given you how my particular area of science, but it will be true of many other areas of science, fits into this. First of all, it's clear that we can only solve our problem by having a distributed computing. We will not be able to assemble all the computing in one place, and we probably wouldn't want to either. We have to have very high throughput throughout these experiments to be able to do the science, to be able to assemble the data, and then to be able to analyze it. Processing these events and picking out the important tracks is a very time-consuming, computing capacity-consuming process. We clearly have to go up and down. When somebody finds that there is an exciting signal somewhere, we have to be able to, or the groups of people will wish to assemble that computing capacity. We've clearly got lots of data, and it has to be spread all over the world, and people have to have access to it. And finally, the scientists have to work closely together. So I hope I've briefly shown you that we've got a lot of problems to address in common with other scientists. It's essential that we find solutions with the help of others to these problems. We will need enormous processing power. In 2005, we'll need enormous data storage and the ability to access that data, and we will need excellent networking for all of these things to operate together. I think we have to do it on a massive scale, but we definitely have to have it done by 2005. And therefore, we have to find solutions, and we want clearly to work with others to be able to find those solutions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.